Roll call, everybody is here tonight. And we'll start with Main Street Update, Gray and Osborne, Larry, Taylor, Tom, and Maury.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council, nice to see you all again. We thought we'd do a little tag team here. Taylor will update you on current events, what the contractor's been doing since our last meeting here a couple weeks ago, and what they plan on for the next few weeks. And then we met with the contractor last week. Mayor had a series of questions that we've got answers for to update everyone on progress and where the contractor's going for the next few weeks.
Hello, Mayor, members of the council. Since we talked last, the contractor on Olympia Street has placed all the subgrade materials, got the curb and gutter placed at the intersection of 7th and Olympia so that it can be ready. In Lyons Park, in the parking lot subgrade has also been placed. The curb and gutter has been poured so that that can be ready for paving. On Main Street, the water line has been placed up to just out front here in City Hall. It has been tested. The main line has all been tested, bacteria tested. Everything came back and it's passed. It's passed the pressure test, so it's all sealed and good to go. As of today, storm line, the main storm line has been tested all the way up through just between 2nd and 3rd. Passed all the tests there. And the contractor is right now continuing to work on water services, getting those subbed out to the businesses off the new main line. And once he reaches that point up to fit, then it's his goal, then he'll be able to start back and going and turning people over from the old line to the new line. Catch basins are still being installed from the main storm line up here towards fit. And he did today put in a water service off of 4th and a side street extension off of 4th towards US Bank. And that's pretty much where he's at right now. With that said, I'll turn it over to Larry.
Well, Taylor, anybody have questions for Taylor before you sit down, Taylor?
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Taylor. I listened to the tape. You came to us October 11th. I realize you're a representative of your firm. This is October 11th, 3 weeks ago. Taylor, quote, couple of week to 3 weeks should have from railroad to fifth prepped and ready to pave. Later asked by Mark Snyder, do they put in sidewalks and gutters in before they pave? Taylor, yes. This is the fourth week. It's a disaster down there. You're not even close to what you're telling us is happening. That's so far away from being paved. We go out and tell the citizens, this is what we're being told. That was the light at the end of the tunnel for us. Hey, don't worry, it might look slow, but we're gonna start paving in 3 weeks. It's gonna start at railroad and come up, and that's what we're being told. And now we look like a bunch of village idiots. Because they drive down there and they're, what is wrong with you, Mark? It's off. This late in the project, it's inexcusable.
Okay. Actually, part of what I was going to talk about dealt right into that, the paving mark. Yes, the contractor did miss that deadline. It's unfortunate he did. We've talked to the contractor about that. We get updates from the contractor weekly when we have our Wednesday meetings. And he just missed it on how far he thought he'd get with the amount of work.
Well, with all due respect, he's not even close. I mean, you've got to admit, drive down there. He's 2 to 3 weeks off. He's not going to start paving on that for 2 or 3 weeks.
He says now the schedule to do the pre-level, which is the first course, from basically the west limits of the canal to first, is November 8th and 9th. That's the commitment he has out of his subcontractor that's doing the paving. And that's the commitment he's given us to start getting that done.
I still don't understand. I mean, we've been told that the gutters or curbs and sidewalks have to be in before they do any asphalt work. And they're going to have that done by November 8th?
Yes.
Will it be cured enough to put in the pavement?
Yeah, it should be. It should be no problem.
He's also been running with, I went to the last Wednesday's meeting. He's running with four crews here. 18? Yeah? Civic's out working right now. He's had them for a while. He's got, of course, more equipment here. As you look around, you can see that. I thought up some questions and what you guys had for comments and brought them to the meeting. And he has a timetable he gave us to look at and stuff. And according to him, he's still fairly close. You know, he's looking at it and saying, hey, we're still fairly close.
Why would I believe anybody at this point?
Well, we also got to realize we're dealing with stuff underground. I pulled up to a stop sign not too long ago, or traffic light, and they hit a line that we didn't even know was even there. Water shooting through the air, took out a bunch of sidewalks that had just been poured. I mean, you know, they're hitting stuff we don't have records on as a city because they're so far back there.
And they should have been hitting it 6 weeks ago.
But in construction, things happen and slow things down. He still feels like he can, as long as the weather holds, he feels like he'll still make it. Last I heard, right, Larry? He still feels like he's going to get it.
Okay. Well, let's go into that. I have been told since the beginning by Mr. Shelton, who meets with the engineers and contractors every week, that the cutoff date was December 6th. And I've been even told by Mr. Shelton that since the change orders came in, more than once he has told me December 6th is the final date for the completion. He even made comments to the effect that after December 6th, the contractor would start paying us. I understood that to mean penalties for not being done on time. The change order was approved on July 26th, very early in the process. I was never advised until last week that these change orders would add 13 days to the project. For the last 2 months, I've advised the citizens that the project would be completed by December 6th. I was never told otherwise. Where did December 6th come from? How'd that get so convoluted?
December 6th was the original 105 working days for substantial completion of the contract excluding the traffic signals. All work on Main Street excluding traffic signals, Olympia Street, the park, the alley entrances, and the patching of the water main work that the city did. The change orders that were approved by council added 13 working days to that. That takes that December 7th date out to December 27th, because they're working days, not calendar days, for substantial completion. There's also a physical completion date that adds in 5 more days to the contract, so that once he's substantially complete, which basically means everything is done so that we can drive on the road, the water system is working, the storm sewer system is working, he's got a few more days just to do his final cleanup. Then when we added in, per the council's approval for the traffic signals, that added another 40 working days for getting...
I don't care about the signals. In fact, I told last Monday, I said, I don't give a rip about the park or Olympia. All I want is Main Street at this point. There should be a like locus on Main Street going and getting that done. Because so far, everything we've been told as the meeting deadlines has not happened.
They have missed deadlines, there's no doubt about that. They're ahead in some areas, behind in other areas. The contractor's schedule shows them, they've actually done some of the water main patching starting on Friday. They finished that today. They have indicated they'll do the pre-level on Main Street from the canal to First Avenue on the 8th and 9th. They'll do the pre-level, the intersection of 14th and Main on the 8th and 9th. They'll pave Olympia Street, Main Street patching of the sewer and water mains up to about 4th. The Lions Park parking lot and the Lions Park walking path. That'll all be done on the 8th and 9th. Part of the contractor's problem has been he's dealing with a subcontractor that the Central Washington Asphalt, who I don't want to say he's at the mercy of the sub, but we get the sub when they're ready to do their work. Unfortunately, that's at the end of the project, the paving, when everyone is expecting work to get done.
We share your frustration, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, the Sub hasn't hung him up yet. He's not ready to pave.
He says he'll be ready to do the pre-levels on the 8th and 9th.
Well, that's a perfect segue into my next paragraph. As early as last Monday, Mr. Sheldon advises they would be paving by the end of the week. And this council was very skeptical and voiced that. Now, their paving was bringing in a dump truck load of asphalt and some little half-pint roller and patching up some asphalt holes. That's not my idea of paving. I don't know if that was a joke or to pacify us or what, but it's embarrassing. I mean, we tell people, oh, they're going to start paving, and they come in. Has any paving equipment been mobilized on this site? I don't think so.
To do the asphalt work, no.
Yeah. And it begs the question, if they can come in and fill these holes in by just a dump truck of asphalt and a little roller, why did they wait 2 months? Why did they make the citizens drive through the potholes, the kids walk through the sand and gravel between the curbs and the roads up by the schools, move over the ruts on 7th Street? Why did they do that 2 months ago? Why did they inconvenience the citizens and not come in and do that, if that's all it took?
I don't have an answer for that, Mark. My feeling is they were going to have a subcontractor do that, but because of the delays in getting them here, they decided to get that done.
Well they did about half of it. I know the ruts on 7th, they did it southbound. They haven't done a northbound yet. They don't have a mark, and they're big old ruts there. I mean, they didn't do anything today.
They indicated that they were going to be finished today. We'll find out whether they did or not tomorrow.
They're working with four groups now. Are they, have they added on more days? I know they were only working 4 days a week for a while.
They are working 5 days a week, as well as the holiday next week. But in answer to a couple of Mark's comments, the information, as you say, is embarrassing. When you talk to your constituents and you pass on something and it becomes not true, well, that flows right down the line. Because as the mayor can tell you, last Wednesday at our meeting, he told us he would not have the paving here by Friday. And I had told you that Monday that he would. That's the information I had current at the time. So my efforts, and to counteract your comments, my efforts are to keep you informed with the information I know. As Larry said, deadlines have been missed. Things have not gone as they were anticipated to go. However, we have that date out there that's, as I said, has slid from December 6th. But there was a time when the contractor was trying to get it paid by November 22nd, and I sent the world a note about that, and that's probably not going to happen either, but that's what I was told, and that's what I wrote up, and that's what I shared with you. There was no intention of misleading or misguiding. In fact, the information that you've received have gotten you to the point where you can ask these questions and say, what about? So I think the information you received has been accurate as it was known at the time. You know, we're constantly saying to the contractor, when are you going to get this done? When are you going to get that done? Now, there's also another avenue we can look at. If we want to deviate from the contractor's schedule, we can ask him to put together a change order to do that. We can give him a date, and at the October 11th meeting, Mr. Spohr, or no, the October 25th meeting, you said it's time the council took over the scheduling of this project. That really can't be done by contract. But you could do that by change order. If you want a change order brought to you for X amount of dollars to finish the project early, we can ask the contractor to do that. Maybe that's what I'm hearing, I don't know. But Larry, I think, has identified deadlines have been missed. Those deadlines were shared with you and they've been missed. But was somebody lying? I don't think anybody intentionally lied. It's just the way this project is going. And I will continue to tell the council what I know to be accurate at the time. And that may change. And if it changes, I'll try to keep you abreast of that. But I think the more important issue to the council is this project going to get done on time? Is the paving going to get done? And the preparatory work, as you said, the concrete work prior to paving, how can all this be done? And I think Larry can speak to that part.
Contractor has indicated, and as for the soon as today we were talking to him on schedule, that he plans to have a majority of the curb and gutter work done from the west end of the project to Fifth Avenue by the end of this week, which will allow them to do the paving next week like they've indicated. They'll have electrical conduits in for the traffic signals as well as the beautification from Broadway to Fourth. That'll be complete this week. They'll do the pre-level, which is the first layer of asphalt that goes down, because there are two layers. Between 1st and 5th by around the 17th or 18th of this month. And the wearing course, which is the final course, they've indicated they'll have done before Thanksgiving. From West Limits to 5th Avenue and at the intersection of 14th. This course is weather dependent, but because it is the original pre-level course, that gives us a little more latitude as far as the weather they can place the asphalt in. There were a few questions that the mayor gave us at our meeting last week. We'd like to take a few moments to answer and address those. One of the questions was, will the existing potholes in the street come up through the new asphalt? And the answer to that is no. There are a few steps the contractor is taking that's in the contract documents to ensure that no potholes will come through. First of all, as he gets ready to prepare for asphalt, if there's any soft spots or potholes, chuck holes, we have a subgrade repair item, which means he digs them out so the soft spot isn't there anymore. We then have 3/4 of an inch of a pre-level of asphalt that will basically take the unevenness of the road now and smooth it out. We then bring in what's called an asphalt reinforcement grid, or a membrane, and that will help save the final asphalt from reflective cracking coming through. And then we have 2 inches of a wearing course or an asphalt on top of that. So we have many layers that add to the final product, so the existing potholes won't come through or translate through. The next question was, lots of people use sidewalks on Main Street. Can the sidewalks be placed when it's freezing? And the answer there, again, is yes. The contractor has to take precautions when it's very cold out to place sidewalk, but it can be done, and it's been done many areas before. And he does plan on having all the sidewalk complete by the 4th week of December. The schedule to pave Main Street, we just mentioned that. We don't have a firm date yet on the final wearing course between 5th and 14th, but they are getting back onto the mainline water this week, and once that's done, they'll be able to address getting the rest of the paving done. The street is uneven now. Will the street be level, or will there be uneven sections coming up through the new asphalt? And the answer to those questions is the street will be level, and there will be no uneven sections coming up through because of the subgrade repair, then the pre-level, and the wearing course. How long will the new pavement last? Will it last 20 years? A qualified yes. A pavement can last 20 years if it's maintained properly. I think we've discussed this at previous council meetings, that if the road is maintained, fog seals, crack seals, overlays over the course of the life of the road, it can last that long. It also depends upon how much traffic, the volume of traffic, and the type of traffic. If it's primarily residential versus primarily industrial truck traffic, big difference there. And I know council has talked about trying to limit the amount of trucks on Main Street. What happens if it rains? Can they pave when it rains? Yes, they can. Now, if it's a monsoon, probably not. But we take care to make sure that on any type of weather, that the temperatures are right, that the ground temperature will accept the asphalt, that the mix itself is of a proper temperature, and they can pave on a day when it's been snowing, if the temperatures are rising in the afternoon. That's something we'll check on them on a daily basis. Other contractors have stated the project won't be completed by December 6th. December 6th was the original deadline, but with additional work added, it's now beyond that, and they believe they'll be able to complete the work by the deadline. Now, they have asked for additional time because of the other additional work, but we're not ready to address that because we're still reviewing that, and we don't know if they're due that yet. But once we've addressed it, we'll get back to Eamon and report back to the council. So subgrade can't be paved over. The paving will look good as it's placed, but it will fail in 3 to 5 years after the contractor is gone and his warranty is expired. The actual backfill material that was being placed with the trenches was good material. It was compacted to the requirements of the specifications. There's also a 2-inch patch in the trenches before we even get to the pre-level and the final learning course. We did that so there would be no possible translation of cracks between a trench and the rest of the road. So there should not be any problem there. The trenches themselves have been compacted, they've passed their tests, and when we actually do the patching, we'll then have 2¾ inches of asphalt over the top of that to make it level with the rest of the road. And the final question was, is the traffic signal at Main Street at 11th moving to 10th Avenue? And the answer to that is no, it's staying at 11th. Those were the questions. Oh, I guess there was one more piece of equipment that's parked out front, been here for a while. They're using that machine to help with the backfilling and the patching of the mainline water and storm trenches. They've been concentrating on other work for the past few weeks, but they'll be getting back to the mainline water this week, so you'll see it in operation again, probably starting Wednesday.
Larry, would you explain Tom's job? I don't know if everybody on the council understand what Tom does for you and for the city.
Tom Goff is our inspector on the project. He's here on a daily basis, working with the contractor, resolving issues that come up in the field, questions that come up, talking to the public, giving the public information as far as what the contractor is doing. If anyone has a concern or question, they'll come to Tom so he can address it, get back to us or the contractor to find an answer, and then get back to whatever business person or citizen was asking the question. He keeps track of records of what the contractor is doing. He's our eyes and ears in the field.
So more or less he's observing what the contractor is doing?
Yes.
And making sure it's to specifications. Okay. Is there any other questions? Go ahead, Ken.
You know me, Larry. I have to say something.
Sure. I have to answer the question.
Yeah, I think you did somewhat some of what you did there. My question is, I understand now that you've got the trenches, you're going to put 2 inches under asphalt there. I come from the old school. It used to be you put 3 or 4 inches of subgrade in asphalt base, and then you put 2 or 3 inches on top. Mm-hmm. That was the way you built roads.
Right.
Well, now you use the fiber or the mesh, which is fine. But the problem with my question is, a lot of these streets out there with the traffic, where we've taken the 2¾ inches, as Mr. Spore alludes to, we've taken that away, and we've got a base asphalt out there. But a lot of that, if you look at it, any time that they go out and put water on that base, you can see what I'm talking about. A lot of that's alligator. And it's broke up, it's little pieces. Even when they're doing these cross trenches, like some of them, they did grind first, then dig. Other places they didn't, they reached in there at the back hole, they picked it up, and sections of that lift up and put it back down. To me, that's not a fit subgrade. That should be removed, taken out of there. Because it'll telegraph right on through there. And my thought is, or my idea is, with all of that alligator going on out there, you don't have that 2 or 3 inch base underneath your pre-leveler or whatever you're using, and then put your mesh down and your finish on top of it. To me, it's not there, and it'll break right through that. I've been there, done that. It just isn't going to work.
Okay. In the areas that are bad like that, we have subgrade repair to take out those bad sections, if you will, and replace them with a sound brand new material and asphalt.
Brad, I know it's 3 months this contract, though. If you're going to have to start it from one end to the other, if you just walk that, you can see it. I mean, the best time to see it is when they get through with a watering truck, go down there as it dries out, and you see what I'm talking about, all okay. The cracks and the alligators and all of that stuff. It's very vivid what's going on. And you don't have anything. I mean, it's not there. It's gone.
We'll get into that and report back to you.
Appreciate that, because I think it's a real concern that we're not getting an A1 job if we don't repair that or do something with it. And I don't think it should be an added on portion of the contract for doing it, because I've been there from the day they ground. Just that.
Okay. We'll look at that.
Eamon, I got a couple questions for you. You can help me out with this a little bit. The Broadway Street project, that was pretty close to a 3-4 month project, I remember.
Yes.
And that was only entailed 6 blocks. It did not entail any of, it did a little bit of the services underneath the street, not to what we are doing right now.
No, the Broadway Street project did a little sub-base and some infrastructure work under, but nothing to the magnitude of this project.
What we're doing now.
2,700 feet of pipe going down the center. So yeah, Broadway basically did the intersection.
And it was all pretty close to a 4 month project. Where our business sits right there in the corner of Broadway and Main, I was greatly affected by it. But you know what? After it got done, we have a beautiful street. Mm-hmm. Got something that we were proud of, and I enjoy it. Right now, we got a big project going. We're doing a lot, and I have been greatly affected on what's going down there, but I don't mind, because I see what's going on every day. I see the change going on every day, and after it gets done, it's going to be a beautiful street. It's going to be a wonderful street. It's going to be something that I'm going to be proud of, because I was part of this council here to do it. And that street is going to last a long time. The infrastructure is going to be there for a long time, longer than what we were probably going to be here. I know they have run into a lot of stuff in the street. I've been down there when they've run into some of this stuff. I believe they are doing a good job to what has been handed to them. They're not going to want to do shoddy work. MRM has just received an award from the state complimenting them on the project on the overpass. The last thing they want is shoddy work tied back to them, or you as the engineers inspecting the job and stuff. We want it, and I believe that's what we're going to be given. I have no problem with that. It's been a wonderful project to watch us go along the way. And we knew going into it that we were going to have some rough streets along the way. It is a rough ride along the way. But look at the end result. It's going to be a beautiful street. We're going to have our beautification committee that has already started to make plans for the future, for the rest of their project. And that's great. I'm really happy with what's going on.
Thank you.
I find it incomprehensible that you would defend what's going on out there. That's just amazing to me.
And I'm greatly impacted by what's going on. But I got to see past that and look at the end of it, too. And that's where I've looked, what we are going to have afterwards.
I just see a total disrespect for the citizens. Last time, the other quote from Taylor was, we try to get after them every week to get potholes fixed. I mean, I don't know how it could get any more disastrous out there. I don't see any effort at all to repair any potholes or try to fix those roads. I mean, it's just a bone-jarring, head-rattling trip crossing the street or going up or down it. And to me, it's total disrespect for the citizens. I see no efforts that way. We've been told so much stuff. It hasn't happened. The citizens are demoralized. I'm embarrassed. The other thing that they haven't got to yet is, and they haven't considered, is Ken Kaler and myself. Because Ken Kaler knows the technical aspect of it, and I know the detail of it, and I will pass on that 20% of the cement in our pool project came back out the next year because it was poured wrong and cracked. And their latest gazebo, that cement came out before it was even set because it rained on them, and they threw plywood and tarps and 2x4s on it and ruined the surface. And we just don't accept subpar work. So, you know, it's going to be watched.
Good.
And that, you know, they need to be aware of that. I hope the employees hold up. This is really subjective, but when I look out there, I see they're cold, they're tired, they're working 5 days, they're away from their family, they just want to get home to their home for the holidays, and I think that's going to be a factor in this whole thing. Now, you always have a caveat, we'll do this, we'll meet the deadlines, depending on the weather. Well, that's, you know, that's just a gimme for them. They'll just, you start projects in finishing them in November, December, the weather's gonna be a consideration. I'm sorry I'm so cranky. You know, I was lighthearted about this and tried to have fun with it, but it's just beyond that for me now. It's just, I can't even deal with it. I think, regardless of the outcome, I think the path of getting there was just an intrusion that didn't need to happen.
But you know, we knew that when we started the project. I mean, you're tearing everything out, so we have to start over. That's what's going on.
Yeah, but you don't have
to
have 4-foot drop-offs in the road when we have in the spec that they're supposed to be filling in potholes. We don't have to be told that they're going to start paving in 3 weeks. And drive down there and not even be close to doing any kind of paving. That stuff doesn't have to happen. Can anybody tell me a reason why they couldn't have started that sewer line up, not the sewer line, the storm drain line up the street, and two blocks behind them have another crew with the water line? That whole thing could have been done by now. They got themselves in this predicament by being undercrewed and unorganized, and I don't know what else. I don't know that much about construction. I'm an accountant that made French fries for 25 years, and I'm the one who called it that they're not going to be done on time, and they haven't met any deadline so far. So I just,
you know, I do quite a bit of construction, not on the aspects of the street, but you hand me a set of plans and nails and a hammer, and I can build you something. And there's been many times when I've had a 8-9 hour project, and it has been extended out, but the jobs look like a mess right up to about the 9th hour. But you get to that 10th and 11th hour, and that's when it all comes together and looks really good. And I think that's where we're at now. Almost all the infrastructure is in. It was explained to me by the contractor on why, one reason why he stopped here too, was because the digging is so easy on the rest of the project. There's not all the surprises in the street that they run in the lower end of town. We had infrastructure down there that wasn't even marked on any of the maps, and that they run into. They don't have this on the east end, and it's a lot quicker. And he's very confident he could come up behind it now as they start paving there and have the rest of the project and follow right behind. That's why I believe we are in the last hours of this project, and you're going to see a lot of work done in the next few weeks. You're really going to see a lot of work done, and you're going to see a lot of progress.
I want to remind you, Tom, that's his whole job is to make sure they do it to the specifications required for this job. Everything that Grant Osborne wrote up, all the specs and everything, he's there every day, all over the place. I watch him. You know, and he's making sure it's being done so that we will have a street that'll last. You know, they're not going to get it with shoddy work. That's his job, is to make sure. Grant Osborne's job is to make sure the job is done right. Not halfway, not three-quarters way, but 100%. And MRM, I've visited with Neil, he has no desire to do that kind of work. He wants the job to be done right. And he's doing everything he can to try to get it done on the time that has been set for him. And, you know, the Wednesday meeting, he's still pretty sure he thinks he's going to make it. So
it
may not make it, Mark. We don't know.
They'll blame it on the weather, and there's no way it'll get done by Christmas.
Well, we can sit here and beat a dead dog, but He hasn't failed the project yet.
I disagree with that.
Well, the project deadline's not done. So you can say...
He hasn't met any of the sub-deadlines that have been told to us.
But at the end of the day, it hasn't finished. The job hasn't finished. He has not failed yet. He hasn't met his deadlines, okay? But he hasn't failed the job yet. You know, Ken's got a good point. We've got to eventually start looking at the glasses half full instead of half empty all the time. And I believe we are on the home stretch. And yeah, we're frustrated, Mark. Everybody's frustrated. Everybody, I'm sure you're getting beat up. You're here every day, just like mine. But you know, my dad always told me you can't please everybody. You can only please a few. So you better start with one at a time and go from there. This job will finish. I firmly believe. I hope he gets it on time. I hope he proves us all wrong. And you know what? Ken's right. When we drive down that main street in the spring, we're all smiles and look how nice it looks and all these trees are, you know, blooming. You know, we'll look back at this meeting and we're going to go, you know, maybe we should have been a little bit off-kilter on it. I hope so, Mark. I really do. But he hasn't completely failed this job yet. And right now, we're throwing him in the casket. Can't do that. You know, you've got to give him the opportunity to succeed, too.
Well, I think the communication needs to be a heck of a lot better. There's an opportunity there, the two things to start with, and two, I think they ought to put a lot more resources to filling in the potholes. If they're going to take this long, at least make the roads halfway decent for the people. You go up on 14th there and turn out to Walmart, it's like a motocross track. I mean, is there anybody who argues with me on that? I mean,
no.
It is tough.
I don't argue on that.
But I don't want to pull the crew away from their work either.
Well, get more crew. That's something they said they were supposed to do.
Before they quit, with a backhoe, shoveling gravel out of the front end of the backhoe, filling in these holes. I've seen them out there doing it. So I'm not going to question that they're not doing it. But there's a lot of traffic over the 3-day weekend that these holes are
busiest intersection in town.
Yes, 14th.
And
gravel will eventually dig out. But they're right back there filling it back in, too.
I tend to be an optimist, and I don't think everybody's out to screw me to start with. And the reputable contractor, he does jobs all over. He's got two going in Spokane. He did the one down here. He's worked for the state. He wouldn't be in business for as long as he's been if he wasn't a reputable contractor and doing good work. So he's a few days behind, he's a week behind, whatever it is. I think that we can put up with it. We have understanding people in this community. And they understand what's going to happen, and I think they got an idea of what it's going to be when it's done. And I just get it done. I don't need to hassle. I don't think we need to hassle it here. Talk to him. Go on a Wednesday at the update, nail him there. You're going to do it.
And let us know. If they're delaying because of weather, I'd appreciate letting us know. Because now, what are we supposed to go tell the citizens?
We will keep you informed on a daily basis of the contractor schedule. If it changes, it stays the same. Tom also, on a weekly basis, walks up and down both sides of Main Street, talks to every business person, gives them an update of what's going on, keep them apprised of the project. He's asked them to take their pulse, if you will, of how they feel about the project. Granted, we may get a different answer being outsiders than you all who are here as representatives of the community, but the feeling we're getting is people understand and they're excited about the project getting completed. Mm-hmm. And yes, Mark, we will keep you apprised through our channels, amen. How progress is going. And if at any time you have questions or would like to come down to the project, please bring Eamon and talk to Tom. He's available all the hours the contractor is here. Except this Friday, he's got a doctor's appointment, so we'll have Taylor here. Unless his wife has a baby, then we'll have David here.
Okay, so what you're saying is go to Tom. That's the person you want to visit with?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of times I know some of these businesses up and down Main Street, have got two entrances where they can use them. Well, when they come through with their sidewalks and curb, take a look, for instance, at the grocery store on the west end of Main Street right now, why couldn't they have put in one entryway and then put in the other one? So you turn out both of them, because they don't even have an entrance now.
Okay.
Same thing was basically true over at the pawn shop. They're working on one, but they also had the other one blocked for a brief period of time, so there's no way you could even get in the parking lot. And I see that up and down the way. I mean, I'm not saying that I did things right either when I was a contractor, because I stretched it as far as I could. But the issue is, we got to respect those people as a business and try to keep them and try to help them, too, to keep them open. Same way as the sidewalks. You got to have a little respect for the traffic. You're pushing people out into the traffic zone, and the way we keep switching our lanes, you're not sure where the traffic's going to be next. And like I say, the sidewalks, if they would have tore those out, jumped in and replaced them in a short period of time, I don't think we'd have this problem. But after you wait 2.5 months and then you're back repairing or redoing the sidewalk, you force those people to find any place they can to try to walk up and down the street. And most of the time, you would make an allotted walkway for those people. And I think it's a problem. I don't know if it's our problem, your problem, or the contractor's problem. Contractor get away with anything he can unless he's forced to push some of these issues to make it happen. I think that's where we're falling down a little bit. I'm saying you, us, all of us, just to make this thing work together, sound like what Ken said. We got to do it, we got to live with the thing to get it completed. But we can clean it up and help the public too on some of these matters.
Yeah, even as far as that, he has responded to those concerns very quickly. The library contacted me. We met down there quite a while back because they have the elderly that go in and out of the library and stuff, and they built up a nice walkway for him to get in and everything, you know. And at least the things we've heard, he's jumped in, at least that I know of, and pretty much taken care of it. So he's been quick to respond to anybody that I've heard, you know, mentioning stuff like that. So.
You know, and I've had wonderful contact. They've come in to me. They let me know last week that my back driveway was going to be blocked all this week because they are putting in the curb and the sidewalk, and I've had an opportunity to talk to the gentleman behind us with the store, and they have his front two entrances blocked this week, but they also made him one at the very west end so cars could get in and out of the lot, and he's very happy. He's getting a new sidewalk. That's how he looks at it. He's really happy about it. He don't mind it. He was out with water for one day for a 24-hour period almost because of a problem reconnecting the 12-inch mains down there, and then how we were put off for one day to accommodate for another business. But that's been all okay. That's coming from another business person down there that I've had an opportunity to talk to. But there has been accommodations for a lot of the businesses. I know they've been in contact with me quite a bit.
Maury, you had something?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'm Maury Block. I'm the office manager and the principal in charge of the research site in Washington, basically. Been doing this for about 30 plus years, 35. And, you know, you've got it's a separate part of the city, very congested area. And then we couple with that, there's a lot of things going on. This is a complex project. Did pour up a lot of the Main Street. A lot of things going on. There's a lot of different elements there, and what seems so reasonable sometimes isn't reasonable to the contractor and the logic that he's putting it together. Yes, he could hire more people, but the thing happens, if you've been around construction and heard the term, contractor's vernacular, of being too long. What that means is you're working away and all of a sudden you work yourself into a corner. It's kind of like painting a room and you forget that the door is over there, you paint yourself over here, then you have to walk back across the paint. And we rely upon contractors with experience. That's what contract specifications call for. They are the people who are responsible. I think one of the things that has happened, and I'm not involved in this project on a daily basis, but I hear about all the issues that come up. There's been a lot of things that have happened here, unknowns. This contractor, I think, has tried to work with the city in that particular aspect of it. I've worked with some that would hang you out to dry. The unfortunate thing, you own the facility that makes you responsible. I'm not trying to say I'm a construction attorney, but I do know they will go after a deep pocket if that's the way they want to be. I think they've tried to work with you. Now, that doesn't make it unfrustrating. They're not filling in the pothole. They're not getting the work accomplished quite in the perspective that maybe some of you thought it should be done. But they are trying to accomplish it. I think it's important to give them that opportunity. They're working against a deadline. That deadline's pretty clear. So there's all these things that fit into it. You know, it is perplexing this time of the year. I'm the first one to admit it. And we're trying to get them to move. But one important thing, the schedule belongs to the contractor. If the city wants to do that and take control of it, you're going to write out a check. Something to keep in mind. They have quality standards to meet. We're going to uphold those quality standards. Is it going to be perfect? We'd like it to be perfect, but we're all human beings. So I don't know that it will be absolutely perfect. Some of you have been in the construction business. We all know that, you know, George over here is doing something, but we thought it was done correctly. It wasn't quite. Things happen like that. They do have a warranty period for 2 years. A lot of contracts you would see, if this was a straight DOT, there isn't a warranty. DOT takes it over. Some other contracts, 1 year. This is two. So I think it has an opportunity for them to fix things. So all I was saying is, I think there's some communication. I would agree with Mr. Spore that probably ought to be a little better on the communication end. And be as clear as possible. But I don't think there's any promises when they do put together a schedule. I think they have to be realistic about it. Things change throughout the week. Put the breakdown, people don't show up. You can hire more people. It takes a while to repair the equipment. We just keep all those things in our mind as you look out there. But the project is a complex project. And I know Larry and Taylor and Tom are pushing as hard as they can. We're going to do how far we can push without costing you guys money. Thank you.
That makes me feel better. The only part I would take exception to is you mentioned the perspective that we think it should be done. And I'm not going by what we think. I was going by what your representative told us, that they would be paving in 3 weeks. So I lightheartedly at the beginning said I thought they'd be done in 8 weeks. And that was, you know, humor, and we were still on plan. But now this late in the project, I don't know when it's going to be done. I have to go by what your representative tells us, and it's that perspective that I pass on to my constituents. I'm done trying to guess what's going to be done.
Okay. Well, should we move on to the next one? I'm not going to solve anything here. Preliminary budget discussion, general fund. Yeah. Thank you for coming. Heyman, I guess you're going to open that one up.
I want to give the council and the mayor a brief lead-in into the 2011 budget process. So far, we have held a mini retreat, if you will, got the idea of informing the council and some of the staff members of what they thought should be in the budget. We've had a number of committee meetings and had three council members assigned each of those committees and have walked through the budget relatively error-free, with the exception of identifying capital and kind of a wish list ideas that we want to see in the budget. Mike is prepared, as he does every year, the 2011 council budget discussion document. And on the right-hand side are the comments of the red flag items. Those are the items that we feel from the committee and from the retreat meeting are up for discussion and need council direction tonight. I do want to share with you, and we got that up there, that the city, although we have not been in the crosshairs as many other cities have relative to the economic downturn, have for the past 3 years, from 2007, maintained the levels of expenditures from each department, minus the collective bargaining agreement, negotiated terms, and whatever capital that the council put in the budget. So I'd just like to share with you some figures to point out what I believe has been an excellent job on the staff's part in holding the line on the budget. You can see, and these are budget numbers, and we'll talk about actual in a minute, but the percent change column, if you look from 08 to 09, percent change was 0.5. From 09 to 2010, a minus 4.8 change. And then 2011 proposed budget is 0.3%. And this is just a general fund budget. That's the budget. That's what we asked you to adopt, and you adopted. So you see very little change. If you took the average over the last 3 years, it's minus 1.3% change. So we have been going backwards. The key to all this is maintaining levels of service. And as I hope you all know, we have done this while maintaining levels of service in this community have not deteriorated. Now, let's talk about actual. And you talk about budgets, which are proposed numbers, etc. But what did we actually do? 2008 to 2009, we had a 2.5% overall budget increase, again, primarily driven by the collective bargaining agreement, salary and benefit adjustments. That's all that was. 2009 to 2010 budget actual was minus 4.8. Again, this is actual numbers. So staff is doing an excellent job on your behalf in holding the line and figures that were really back to 2007. You have received a balanced operating budget from the staff and from the mayor. Some options you have tonight, I'd like to share three of those with you. The first is, you have a balanced budget, you can move forward and adopt that and add zero increases to that. And that will maintain all the reserves where you'd like to see them and operating expenses back to the 2007 levels. But we would add no capital, there'd be no improvements to anything, no computers, no cars, no ADA compliance with City Hall. That's one option. Second option, you could look at the operating budget, which is balanced again, and add those items from the capital, the right-hand column, your red flag line items. Add those elements that you think are only absolutely necessary for 2011, such as the ADA or City Hall building, which I think is a crucial element. We have to have that for compliance. You could look at car rotations, computers, which we have on a rotation cycle. Once you start mixing that up, then you've got to double your efforts and spend double the money down the line just to catch up. So things like that I'd ask you to consider. Then take a look at where we are at the end of the first and second quarter in 2011. See where our revenue projections are. See where our expenditures are. And then revisit the capital items, the balance of capital items that you don't put in for 2011 during this budget process in November. The third option, you could adopt the operating budget, the balanced operating budget for 2011, and add every red item on this column on the right-hand side, add every one of those. By doing that, you're going to have to make choices on where you'll take the money from, and why should you go through that. So as we walk through that, I'd just like you to keep that in mind, that staff is really at the 07 levels for their requests. With that, Michael, can walk us through the budget.
Mayor and Council, This is the first budget session of two budget sessions. This will be the general fund operating budget. And then next week we'll deal with all the balance of all the rest of the funds. The last council meeting, Councilmember Ken Johnson asked, he was concerned about my financial report and some of the things I reported on there, namely sales tax, which was down, and also the total tax revenue was down, I think, by about $102,880. Ken was in City Hall the other day, and I had just received our state share of revenue. I get a monthly notice from them as to what they're going to transfer into our checking account. And utility taxes were down again, but not like they have been. They were down a little over $9,000. So the total for through October is about $163,163. Utility taxes came in really healthy in October. We do get some quarterly payments. So sometimes it can look like it's down, and then all of a sudden it can change overnight. And October was one of those months we got a good hit on our utility taxes. So utility tax went from being down by 102 to being down by about $66,000. So we made up some ground. I mentioned to Ken that I would look into the 2011 estimate on the sales tax to see if maybe we should lower the estimate. And in fact, when I did the estimate for 2011, my estimate was $100,000 less than the 2010 estimate. So I feel comfortable with what we have in there right now. And so I think the budget that we're showing you, the preliminary budget that we're showing you tonight, I believe is very realistic. And so I'll just take you through a couple of things. I'll get the spreadsheet up here. This spreadsheet is what we've been doing the last couple of years. Down here, there's a bar across the bottom right here, and it separates this part of the spreadsheet from the math at the bottom. This is the key right here. This shows our beginning fund balance, and this is an estimated beginning fund balance. And it shows our revenue. These are revenue estimates. And this is our preliminary budget, the expenditure side, and it shows our ending fund balance. So revenues are exceed expenditures by $102,835. And I'll show you, just for those of you that haven't been through this process before, I'll go over to the top part of the spreadsheet, and I'll scroll down to a red item, such as this item right here, for instance. If the council chose to put this in the budget, I would move it over like this, and you'll see the math at the bottom change. So I move it over here, and this math at the bottom changes right down here from 102, because now we move it over the budget, it changes to 67,000. So we can do what-if scenarios as we go through the budget. And you can ask the question, what does it look like if we do such and such, and so on. Well, that's how this is set up. The column that we're really interested in is the red flag column and the one just to the left of it. The others are the previous budget, 2010-2009. And so, if you're ready, I'll just start typing up here. I wanted to pass out as well. I have another spreadsheet here. These are the reserve funds, and this is information you need to make choices if you want to include the capital, and where are you going to pay for the capital. This will help you do that. Excuse me.
Is this forecasted beginning of year fund balances?
Pardon me?
Is this forecasted beginning of 2011?
This is what it was, the ending balances would look like at the end of 2011 if we accept the budgets the way they're presented.
Without the capitals?
Right, this is just the reserve funds. This is what would be in them if we leave them where they are. And then as you choose to put to fund capital, then the balances would be lowered on these.
Okay. I'll go back into the spreadsheet and I'll start scrolling down and if you want to stop me at any point, just goes on Mandy or so the first item is the legislative total, and it's up from the previous year. And the main part is the air cards for the council computers. That'll be about $3,465 in 2011 for the whole year. So that's what rates the total in the legislative portion. Judicial, I think we all know that Adams County is raising that, and this is the first year of the increase. It's $25,000 this year. It's going to be $25,000 again like next year or something. But it's going to be an incremental increase, and this is the first year of the increase. The executive portion, his increase was mainly salaries and benefits that increased that. Civil service didn't change. Financial services, probably the most important services in the city. No, that's kind of a joke. Yeah. Anyway, it didn't change. It actually went down just a few dollars, about $125 for financial services. Record services, it didn't change by much. It was $29 or something for financial services. So we're just really holding the line on these. Facilities, it went up some, but I believe, I'm trying to remember, electricity went up about $4,000, so the increase could be just utilities alone. This is the area where we put in the red column, there's two items. City Hall ADA compliance is one of them. And then City Hall exterior maintenance is another item. And did you want to speak to those two items?
Okay, just briefly, the entrance to City Hall is not ADA compliant. There's some automated door issues there and things that we have to do to make it compliant. The estimate for that is $15,000. As to the City Hall exterior, we had a couple people look at it. The building's 13 years old now and starting to show a little bit of wear, and we just don't want that to continue. There's some paint, some soffits, and things that need attention. So we have a $20,000 line item for maintenance of the exterior.
Is council interested in either one of these items?
I think we've been talking about the ADA compliance for a while. I think that's something that we should
We want our citizens to be able to get in the door no matter what.
That's cheap compared to a lawsuit we get.
Exactly.
We've had several complaints about that with individual towns. I think it needs to be done. It's what we do.
Does that include the side entrance over here and the police entrance in the back?
No, this is the public
entrance. Just the public entrance, that's all.
Okay, so I guess move that one in. What about city maintenance, building maintenance?
Pay me now or pay me later.
Yeah.
It'll
get a lot worse.
Yes, and it's getting on at the point.
13 years.
A lot of the soffits is missing the paint. It's down to wood now, and it will cost much, much more if we keep on putting it off.
Okay. Yeah, at least for now.
And now we're going to risk management. I haven't gotten the new numbers for insurance coverage for 2011. So I basically pretty much used the number that from last year. Legal doesn't change. Information systems technology is actually down about $48. Other governmental services, this is kind of
odds and ends. And in this, we have $2,500 for 4th of July fireworks. This slide is down. They're right here, and you can see that I'll just highlight these slides too. The Columbia Basin Development League contribution for $6,000 and the membership, I moved out of the general fund and put it in the water fund because I believe it's a water-related issue and it should be in the water fund. So that lowered this category somewhat, and that's the result.
I was hoping Columbia Basin Development League would have been here tonight.
They're going to be here next week.
They're going to be here next
week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. We got them scheduled because we are going to do the water fund next week too. So.
And they committed to be here.
This section also includes the Adams County Development Council, which we refer to as the ACDC, I believe. The last budget they gave us, their beginning inventory on their budget, beginning balance on the budget was $70,000. The actual beginning balance was $13. An organization that's $70,000 off either has a miscommunication or misbudgeting or some kind of deviant, and I am not interested in giving them $3,400 till they come to me and explain. And also they ran at a $4,000 to $5,000 deficit last year. So as I said earlier, these people that come and ask for money, I'd like to see their mission statements, their goals, their budgets, and that budget has not proved to me that they can manage money. If I was in an entity and told my boss he'd start the year with $70,000 and I said, oops, it's only $13, you're gone. That just doesn't work. And I don't think it should work in this environment.
Do we have them scheduled, Eamon, to come? Or?
Pardon me?
Are they scheduled to come?
We can have them here.
Does the council want them here?
That'll be next week with the other organization.
Okay.
And I might add that Eamon put out a memo as to what is required of somebody who comes to the city and asks for money. And it does list those items that you mentioned, Mark. And I used that with Columbia-based development and when I talked to them about coming and doing the presentation next week. And in fact, I gave them a copy of that and said, this is what we require, and we'd like you to come and talk about these issues at council.
Well, you know, we've challenged. I put out the challenge for the chamber too, when they have to come, when they say they're going to start with $20,000 and can fully budget the year, and come 3 months later and tell us they don't have money for fireworks, and then nobody has ever given me anything to explain that deviation.
That's part of tourism.
Yeah, tourism.
Part of tourism.
Right.
And we will be. We should be doing that. Community services, no change in community services. General administration was changed by, what is that, about under 70, it's about 60,000, I think. For total and non-expenditures, that's just sales tax required. Here is the capital portion for the administration right here. We have City Hall computers. This is an annual thing we do. We rotate our computers about every 3 years, isn't it?
4 years.
About 4 years. And this is the money we used to do that. We have some other items in here. Electronics room, fire suppressor. Electronics room option, I think on that same electronics room, air conditioning, and City Hall HVAC upgrade. And Stan has gotten some, let me see if I can find it here. We're going to just sit here. Yeah. Stan has done a paper on it, I guess. And he's here to answer any questions if you have any questions on that. And I'm sure that you have a copy of this in here. Well, you would if you have work on it. So the upgrade of the HVA electronic controllers and software. Yes, ma'am.
difference, about $23,420.
Could I say just a little bit about that? You notice how warm it is in here tonight? This thermostat is right behind you. It's probably set at about 68 degrees, and that's what we're dealing with. We have to manually open valves, close valves, just to get the temperatures correct, because the computer sensors aren't communicating with one another properly. And we can come in one morning and have 60 degrees, come in the next morning and have it 80 degrees. And consequently, when they said their electric bill, their electric bills were up, I think we're going to, as it stands right now, the boiler can turn on and we're heating up water that gets circulated through the system, and there's some dampers upstairs that we've come in sometimes, they'd be wide open. So it comes in right to the heat exchanger and then goes right up, straight up, without getting into the building. We're dealing with a lot of that. I think this is something that really strongly needs to be done.
So this is mainly software and programming is what the highest cost in this?
Well, the software programming, but there are replacement electronic controls, which are now industry standard instead of proprietary, which is what the system is that's in here now. This BACnet system, all of the major controllers, whether you have Johnson Controls or Honeywell, they're all interchangeable now. So if something, we aren't tied to one vendor, the software will control all of those. It reuses the tucks, or the actual controllers that sit on the valves to open and close. The new system will work with the existing ones until they die, and then of course we'll have to cost maintenance. But we don't have to replace everything. The wiring is there. We just have to upgrade so that we can work with it. The computer system I mentioned in there was 1993, Windows for Workgroups 3.11. The software will not run on a newer computer. And working through that and trying to get it to work, nobody knows how to get it programmed properly anymore. It's totally obsolete. And I think that we will cost ourselves more money in constant maintenance and public works time and my time trying to keep the building straight and wasted utility bills than what this will cost us. Just my two cents.
The next item is fire protection for electronic film. I think Stan spoke about these things at the workshop. For a quality system, he's estimated the cost of $12,000. And for something that might do the job, it would be less quality, I think, is what, $7,500?
No, actually, that the electronics room is separate from the electrical room is just where the main breaker panels are. It would be nice maybe to have. I'm of the opinion that's probably not as high a priority. The electronics room where the computers, the phone system, the police radios, I think that's something that I feel very strongly about that one.
And then air conditioning for the electronics room, an estimate of $8,000.
Is that pretty important, Stan? Electronics
well,
in there?
Well, as I mentioned in my little deal I wrote up, mm-hmm. when we lost our building air conditioning went south this summer, it got up about 100 degrees in there. One server totally failed, had to be replaced. One of the network switches failed, which meant police dispatch and everything pretty much went down for a period of time until I could grab used parts and cobble something together to get us up and running. And we did have to replace that, less than $1,000, but lost productivity. Anytime it gets excessively warm around electronics, you dramatically reduce the lifetime of that equipment. In this case, some of it went out right away. We don't know what the long-term effect will be on the rest of it. But we've got, everything is in that room. The police radios, the recording for the emergency dispatch, our community public radios, information system is up in there, public works radios are in there. The phone system that handles everything. I mean, if we had a fire in there, back to the fire suppression, or it gets too hot in there, we could lose a lot of function to the entire city. Our ability to provide the services that we're supposed to provide, I think is pretty important.
That that doesn't fall under the HVAC upgrade for the rest of the building?
No, it really doesn't, because if everything is working perfectly with the basic HVAC, the very best that I've been able to do is to keep that room in the lower 70s. There's a lot of heat that's generated in there, and the HVAC system, when it has been working at its best over the 2.5 years I've been here, it's never been down below 70, 72 degrees. And this room should be kept between 60 and 65 degrees. You know, could we get by without it if the HVAC system is working well? Probably so. Could we afford to gamble? You know, if something happens and we lose the HVAC during the hot part of the summer, I know I spent a couple nights here with fans trying to keep things cool enough. It's not much fun.
You have no backup to rely on, basically.
Yeah, right.
The request on the air conditioner is a standalone system just for that room.
So these are the choices right here on your capital equipment.
So City Hall computer upgrades, what does the council want to do on that?
Any estimate on how long it'll take to pay off that $23,000 to make a difference? Are you going to save enough money to
if it is have that paid off? Less than two, I would bet.
No, but if you spend it, then your bill should go down enough over 10 years it will pay for it.
I don't know how much the bill would be. You know, I really don't know. I'm not into the accounting portion of it. Logic tells me that we're throwing a lot of money. The air conditioning, two phases of the air conditioning turning on during this week when I was monitoring it, while most of the building is in the low 60s. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I understand that.
I think that it's a large percentage of our utility bills are just being wasted.
It seems to me that if you go out and talk to Honeywell or all these guys, they'll give you an estimate of how much you're going to save by putting their equipment in. And I know the hospital put all that stuff in several years ago. Bob probably went into that lately. It seemed like it was like over the period of 10 years, saved the amount of money you put back into it. So in the long run, you're probably better off to buy it and get it over with and get it done with. And then you don't have that chance of screwing up your whole building, and you're still going to save in the long run.
And I don't know about the electronics portion of a basic HVAC system, but in computer electronics, 3 to 5 years is maximum lifetime. The system's what, 13 years old?
Some.
Yeah. So most of this is just, it's lived its life. We're replacing components. For example, we just had to replace some components, and we're looking at almost $1,000 for one controller card. And we had to replace two of them, and then we have $560 for four other ones throughout. You know, and we're putting in replacing with obsolete equipment. It's probably the time to start putting in something that's going to last us for another 10 years.
Yes, go ahead.
Look at that. You know, I don't have any problem with putting in a secondary coverage for that in case something goes down as far as our HVAC is concerned. But in here, you've got another $23,000 for your upgrade of your HVAC. Would part of that, the electronic portion of that, the computer portion of that, would that be resolved if we upgraded some of that HVAC?
It may help it. I don't think that it would solve the entire problem. I don't, and again, you've got a single point of failure instead of a backup.
Well, I'm talking about going ahead and doing the backup portion of it, but we're talking about changing the computer portion of this HVAC. And if we upgraded the new HVAC to upgrade what we've got, some of that should be taken care of.
The $8,000 is just a standalone system for that one room, the rest of the building. You've been in here when it's been ice cold, and now we're in here at top.
I understand that portion, but because you've got a figure there, $23,500. Is that those figures, or is that a separate portion for upgrade of the HVAC itself in the building?
That's the building. That's for the.
So that's what I'm saying. With that portion up above is $6,000. Part of that should be in that upgrade, I would think.
No. I'm sorry. I was confused. What the $6,000 can is the computers in the admin offices that we rotate every 4 years.
Okay.
That's totally separate from the HVAC.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry, I misled.
Yeah, because that's what you were saying, was that portion.
Yeah.
So, okay.
No, totally separate. That's the all the admin office computers.
That includes printers and some of the other things.
I'm on the same page then, because I was taking a relation to what you said there.
I'm glad you said $6,000 again, then I got it.
So do I hear move the $6,000 over by the council?
I think if you don't move it over, you're going to be paying more in the long run because you're going to have to catch up. That's one of the cycle things.
Nod
yes?
Okay, move it over. Got it already. The $12,000 for electronic room fire suppression?
Yes. Well, if we lose that room,
it's a pretty important room. I'm going to look at it one time. It's, there's a lot of heat being generated up there.
Yeah.
It's a lot of heat.
A lot of equipment.
Yeah. Okay, I guess move that over. Did that already. Electronics room option.
That's actually the electrical room, not the electronics room.
Electrical room option.
Okay. Typographical. Was that secretarial error? It's a 75. That is for just the main electrical room with all of our main breaker panels. We do have the phone lines coming in from Ma Bell into there, and they have their DMARC room in there. Important, but not nearly as important as some of the others. So if you were to leave anything out, that would be my first choice to hold off in maybe another year or so. But, it's... I mean, electricity and water still don't mix, but... The cost of recovery wouldn't be nearly as bad.
Comments?
I think we're going to hold off for another year on that one. Hold off. It's important, but.
Okay. So, consensus is hold off?
On the
yes.
7,500?
On the 7,500, yes.
Hold off on it.
Mark?
Okay.
Okay, we'll hold off on that one then. The $8,000 electronics room AC, that's the individual room itself where all the equipment is in. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, move that definitely over. The $23,500, sorry.
If you go back further, I'm sure we've put other capital into this HVA system here.
Yeah, we did.
It seems like we just keep it just like a money pit. What did that go for? Does anybody remember?
Was that a vent in different vents? They opened up.
And that was repairs and adding the heat coil for this room. There were a number of things that it repaired, and most of what was done previously is not duplicated by this. That was the more of the mechanical function,
switches
and this is more of the control function.
Mm-hmm. Mark, you are correct. About 3 or 4 years ago, or a couple of years, we did HVAC upgrades, and Stan just said that was all mechanical.
Okay, what's council want to do on that?
It needs to be done.
Yeah.
It's going to save
money. It's going to save us money.
Move it.
It's going to save us money.
Okay. Okay. Who's next? Mike, you keep going or?
Before we get to the police department, we went through salaries, and I just want to remind council that last year, minimum wage earners and Social Security people got zero increase, and all our salary people got a 5% increase. This year, Social Security increase is zero, and I think minimum wage got a dime more an hour or something. So I think the 5% they got last year covers last year and this year. And even though it's a minimal amount, I think it's the prudent thing to do to hold the line on salaries this year. So ponder that one. Because last year I voted against the budget because of that. I thought it was very excessive to give our people 5% raise when other people who are paying taxes on minimum wage or Social Security got nothing. Was not right.
Okay. Hey, police, you got something, Ken?
Yeah, I guess we won't know on the salary until they're done with the union negotiations.
Where is the law written that, our salary people have to follow what our union people get? I don't understand that connection. When we were out at the plant, that was never the case.
There is no written policy that says that. There's no written ordinance that says that. However, in Othello, it has been tradition, if nothing else. The balance to that is the majority of non-union staff members with one brief letter and signature, they're in either union that exists here. So it's always been a balance to give the same to non-union as union employees. But as Ken said, we're looking at a different approach this year. Money and salaries is only a placeholder. We aren't pitching salary increases per se. We have to finish our negotiations. We're currently talking, as we've talked before, medical increases, the city picking that up, which benefits the employees in two ways. Number one, it saves them from out of pocket, and number two, it then becomes non-taxable dollars to the employees. So we're not done with those yet. But it's just a money placeholder.
Well, just consider that what we're saying to our constituents about giving these raises. And I think Mike had figured that even this paying this medical salary is close to a 3%.
Yes, 2.8, that's
correct. So again, an environment where people are getting nothing and some people are taking reductions.
And as you pointed out, Mike did some calculations, and for me, it's a 2.8 with the medical. What is in the budget currently is 1.5. So if we do the medical, that portion of the budget won't have to be adjusted.
Upwards, thank you.
This is the police department. We start with operations. I'll just go to the bottom line here. There has been very, very little change. From last year. Investigation went up a little bit. They added some money for operating supplies and miscellaneous. Criminal justice training went up, and actually, that's quite a jump. I can't remember. Do you know why he bumped that up, David?
One, he has to go to some training in Texas and contemplate sending one of the sergeants to some training in South Carolina or something. That was the main reason for the things.
So that would explain the increase there. Facilities, a slight change. Then we get into patrol. And this is where, in the red zone, you have a statement in your packet from the chief on him being actually one officer from what he's been allocated. And I think that was back in like 2007 or 2008, he was allocated an additional officer. And then when Lieutenant Hampton retired, he never actually replaced that position within the body. And so that's what this is right here. It would be you put it in at a starting salary of $46,518, and benefits would be about $18,680.
that's a line officer position, not a supervisor.
That's correct. And this is not a supervisor position.
Yeah, but if you had a position and eliminated it and didn't fill it, that should still be in there as a budget item. That's not a new officer. That spot was there.
So we just need to move that back over.
Was this in the budget last year?
No, it was not. We did not budget.
Was not in the budget.
For 16 okay. positions last year.
So this is a new position because it was not in last year.
Well, a citizen already got to me on this one, and I'll give them, they were pretty astute. They said what has happened is all we've done is move an officer out of the officer category into assistant chief, nothing personal, and now we're asking for another officer. And that appears exactly what we're doing.
You know, this one I've thought about a lot because I was on the police department budget and the general budget. And then when my questions come up last week, it really made, because this particular position is funded straight from the general budget, which is supplied by part of it, our utility tax, and 50% coming, 50% coming from our utility tax and our sales tax going into this. I've been very supportive of the police department in the past for all the requests, but I think this particular position at this time, this is one that we need to take a look at 6 months down the road to see what our revenues, because of the shortfall that we are possibly going to experience on our income this year, affects our starting balance for our new budget coming up. And what it's going to affect is pretty much going to wipe out that $100,000 that we were showing that we had to work with at the end. And then we throw in this $65,000 position, and that's going to make it that much more less. Less just to say go with it, but I think we really need to look at it at the bottom line, especially with our income that we got coming in. Because like I said, it is being supplied solely from our general budget. Some of the capital expenditures that we have added to it can be coming from the utility. That's no problem with that.
Do you want to move on?
I don't know. We're going to see what the council wants to do here. Assistant Chief Inks, do you have anything to say you want about this one? Or?
Well, the only thing I'd like to say is you're really not adding an officer. You, in 2006, when the chief arrived, we were at 15 men total for the department. In 2007, you agreed to raise that by one officer. Since that time, through retirement, whatever else, we have lost that position. All we're asking is you bring us back up to that position. I've got one less guy on the road.
You
know, as a council, you guys are taking a lot of flack about certain crimes going on and stuff. Just realize, I've got one less officer because we're operating less. You're cutting us, basically, to answer those calls and do those kind of things that we'd like to do. And all we're really doing is asking you to bring us back to that one level, not make it really an increase. This would not be going over what that 16-man department we had in place. And I believe, and I, you know, the chief's not here to speak to it, but I believe the long range, we weren't asking for any people down the road even. We can hold the line at this level for quite a few years, unless there was some big increase in the population.
And I'll be the first one to argue. I've been hit a whole lot down there at the shop lately.
My patrol car got its tires slashed this morning, too.
Yeah, you know, I've had a vehicle stolen. I've had somebody try to break in three times down there. You know, I would agree. You know, it would be nice to have that extra man. But I think we really need to look at our end dollar, especially with the income level, unless we can figure out how to fund this with some more income.
Well, we have, again, I don't think we're really asking to dip into any reserves to add any people. I think if you look back over the last 2 years, that we have that position. We've held that position. We have not asked for a lot of capital items over the last few years. The city has needed in other areas, so we've held pretty tight for our budget.
Yeah, and I think where our mistake was is we didn't include this salary in our budget last year. So now we're really going to fail back to the fish year when we want to put it back in.
I'm not sure how you calculate, but according to our budget, we have 10 officers. We have chief, assistant chief, 3 sergeant, which is 15.
Two sergeants.
1, 2.
We used to have 3.
Oh, okay, I see they moved that. And then the salary under investigations, an officer. So that is that your 15?
If we get one position back, we have a full 16 right now, which is operating. We're actually one sergeant short. That a sergeant position is really what's missing.
Yeah.
That could be a line person too. I mean, it doesn't have to be a sergeant.
Maybe I could ask that we continue with our process and our budget and revisit this officer portion at the end of our budget to see what our bottom line dollars can be.
Sounds good to council? Okay.
And me and the chief had words about, I hope, don't take this personal, this is just slots, that with the assistant chief, we'd only need 2 sergeants. So there's, you can kick that around philosophically as much as you want. Are you under the understanding that this would be the year we assign another sergeant? Is that a plan?
I don't believe that's a plan, no.
Okay.
I agree, that's not my understanding either.
Okay.
Remain 2 sergeants.
Okay.
And currently, the assistant chief is acting as also the day sergeant.
So right.
You've combined those positions right now.
Okay.
And we're short 1 patrolman.
That was my understanding. Thank you.
Another thing to consider also is we have a fair amount of turnover, so we put a 16th person on there. We may be averaging 15 as we're going through the year, but unfortunately, even though we pay well, but we have troubles keeping. They want to go to a big city, I guess. So another thing we fight.
Well, we had 1 start today in case the council doesn't know. His first day on my office today.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, you're looking at 8 to 12 months before he's on the road protecting. Between the time he has to go to the academy, through training, whatever, you're looking at least 8 to 12 months before he's out there. Every time I hire him.
But he's paid from today. He's paid from today.
Correct.
But we lost people. You haven't been paying for 1 since July.
Gotcha.
Okay, dispatch.
Okay. In the red column, the chief is requesting increasing a part-time dispatcher to full-time. So the amount you see in the red column is the incremental increase. Okay, so if you have the 18,705 and the 19,885 together, you can have the total salary. And the same is true with the benefits. So it would be an incremental increase of $33,561. And I believe that's part of his statement that was included in the packet as well.
Uh-huh. Is this one also assistant chief?
Basically, we have 6.5 dispatchers. We have a part-time dispatcher. What we'd like to do is increase that to a full-time position, and that accomplishes several things. One is we paid out a large amount of overtime this year because we had dispatchers sick, and right now we got only 1 working maybe, so you add a lot of it where you have to cover people's vacations and stuff. We have to pay overtime to do that. This would help alleviate some of the overtime. The other thing is that we would like to use that position to fill in where right now Stan is doing the evidence room. He is the evidence custodian. So 3 days a week he has to work in there. where he cannot work in IT positions that require him in the rest of the building. For us, evidence is probably the primary section of our department that is has to be run efficiently. There are three separate audits that are done. The chief does audits on the evidence room. The state will do a lot of on us, and our accreditation pulls audits on us. And when we went and got accredited, that evidence room was the number one thing they look at. I mean, the thing has to be videoed, it has to be alarmed, there has to be, the lock has to be coded so that they know exactly who entered at what time. And it's the biggest thing that causes us or state headache in tracking. And so by bringing that to a full-time position from half-time is we increase our staff as far as being able to cover if people get sick or vacations or dispatch, and they would take over the evidence for what Stan's doing now, free him up to do more IT stuff.
How about my argument that we're not dispatching sheriff anymore, so we don't need as much dispatch resources?
We still have to dispatch our people. And we need one body in there each shift to be able to do that.
That was the right answer.
And we do AM and fire.
We dispatch AM and fire currently.
I mean, that was my argument when I talked to the chief is okay, you're not doing sheriff now, but how do you budget 0.75 person, you know, in there all the time? It just doesn't work that way, so.
Yeah, since we're a 24/7 operation, we have to have one dispatcher at least in there. So that's three per day. They have to
be 7 days a week.
Do you have any idea how much overtime it's going to take?
I don't have exact numbers. I would say we realistically could cut it by 50% probably. I don't have exact numbers, but that position would be able to fill in on vacation right now. If a dispatcher goes on vacation, we have to cover, you know, we have to bring people on overtime at least two days a week of their vacation to cover this. Sometimes more.
Sometimes there's people that like half-time, and would we have to hire somebody new, or does this person want to go full-time?
It's my understanding this person wants to go full-time.
Okay. Because that's in the consideration, because I've seen people actually leave a job when you offer to them full-time because they don't want that, and then there's a training cost of hiring somebody else, so.
And that is a legitimate thing, Mark, but we did approach him ahead of time to make sure that he wanted to move into that, because you're right, absolutely right. If you did make that full time and they didn't want to do it, they walk away from you, then you got to go out and recruit somebody else, train them and all that. But we did ask them up front if they want to move in.
Okay.
So how do we feel?
I think that's why the chief proposed that, because we had a conversation with the part-time person, and based on that, he came forward with this recommendation.
I think it's something we should move over.
Sounds like you want to move it over? Correct?
And there's also benefits overtime, too?
Yeah, I saw that down there, too.
The benefits overtime is a little funny thing with bias, and we're getting that fixed the first of the year. So there isn't going to be, I have a big salary and benefits spreadsheet. And when I do benefits, I already include overtime in that. So So the benefits that I am budgeting here already include benefits for overtime. Then BIAS goes ahead and they break off benefits off of that overtime. And anyway, it got very, very convoluted. And I told them, I said, I don't want it to work that way. I want it to work the way I want it to work. So at the first of the year, we're going to their advanced payroll system. It'll be budgeted, it'll be done the way that we want it to be done. So it's already budgeted in here, and it has been year after year after year after year. And it just so happens that when I put the actual numbers in here that I take out of BIAS, I have to put that benefits overtime number in here because that's what their system is. What it does is at the end of the year, benefit numbers for our people sure will be less because that's not in there. So it actually works out. You know, it just looks kind of funny. So you want me to add both of those items?
Yeah. I think you need to be a little bit careful here.
Yeah.
Our actual was $88,000 in change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to have $33,000.
It's like over $8,000.
Spread marks not all over this.
No, your only increase is $19,000.
Well, $19 for salary, and then down here is $13
for the benefits.
The total increase is $33,561.
Increasing $33,561 for $8,800 worth of overtime.
And we're better off paying the overtime and leaning towards the extra officer. You know, giving them more ammo.
You still have more people on the street.
You know, you're still going to have to work them. You're still going to pay them. You're just not giving them the full-time position. The hours are still going to be there. I mean, even if that figure was $10,000.
But is this half-time person going to say, I don't want to do half-time anymore and leave, and then what are we going to do?
There's somebody that's
going to
take a half-time position.
Yeah, I mean, maybe job is us. Mark said it, jobs are scarce. People are taking cuts in pay to stay working, and he's been here a while.
Yeah.
We went to him with that proposal. He did not come as a woman full-time.
Okay.
So I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think that person's going to leave if he doesn't get full-time, because it wasn't really him coming with us asking for it.
You know, at the end of the day, would you rather have another dispatcher full time, or would you rather have that 16
And you really want me to answer that?
I don't think you need the answer. I know the answer to that. But
my answer would be, what the chief's answer might be a little different. So
I think I would be more inclined to move over the officer than the dispatch. So
how about the other dispatchers? Do they like the overtime?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. The answer is no, we don't want to, and we have to force the issue. We've had to actually tell people you have to come into work. They don't have a choice, actually. But, you know, we try and get people to volunteer if they want the overtime, but it's just patrol or dispatch. You know, if it's putting a body out there to provide a service for the city, they don't get an option.
That's why the collective bargaining agreement is mandatory. It's not voluntary.
Yeah.
They go through the voluntary process first, but then they can say, no, you have to.
So is it like high seniority has the option, but you get to the low seniority and they have to?
That's seniority is the way we offer it as far as voluntary. Then once we run that course, when we go to the mandatory, actually we can pick and choose whatever best suits the city.
Really?
That's because schedules are already set. The highest seniority guy could be on shift for 2 or 3. Yeah.
Right. Instead of running somebody's 16-hour shift, a lower priority might work in where they're on their days off and we can work them.
Gotcha.
Double shift.
Okay. I'm with you. I'd rather see that officer out on the road.
Yeah.
I really would.
Okay, that's basically three.
Yes.
Three. Do I hear the same thing over here for some of you?
We're within spitting distance of $100,000. I'd rather have the officer.
Okay. So we will not do the dispatch. Put the officer in then, Mike.
Okay.
So move back up to the officer.
Okay.
At least for now, anyway.
In capital expenditures, we've been programmer is replacing two cars a year. I figure with the number of officers they have, and I think it's on 8 years. In 8 years, they would replace all the cars.
It's an eight-year rotation on cars.
Yeah. I will tell you, the council, that the chief originally left this out of his budget, and I asked him to put that back in so we don't get caught down the line like we did about 7 years ago.
I remember that.
By multiple vehicles in 1 year. Mm-hmm. I'd rather keep the rotation going and keep the expenditure smaller every year. So he put it back in my request.
Any problem with that?
I'm okay with it. Just a sidebar, I'm all for this coming out of the utility fund, because that's one of those things I can point to and say, this is what your utility taxes are going for.
So, you're going to move that off
then? Yep.
Okay.
Now, the utility, not the other fund balance.
Right. When we get down to the end of the general fund, we can talk in general funds.
Yeah.
Because for the capital right now, is got us almost $110,000 in the hole, so to speak.
Yeah, but just remind council, this is tip of the iceberg, and as we start going through these budgets, there's a lot of red numbers hanging out there in the columns.
There is.
And there's going to have to be some no's said unless we want to go broke.
Okay, then we get into the fire department, and I haven't heard anything from the fire department about requesting a contract thing, but maybe it's because the CBI hasn't moved in the sense of the positive thing for them, but I'll have to talk to them.
Right.
I basically put in here what they had last year for our contract services. And then this item right here, I don't know, they didn't get a copy of this today, email for there's
$150,000. Okay. Mike, under the fire department, I don't see the contract payment.
Yeah, it's right here under contract services at $227,934. Right here on the.
Who's there? Oh, I gotcha. My bad. Wrong column.
The next item, the $150,000 you see there under the capital expenses for general, under generator and auto transfer. Council talked about the need for providing a generator for our city fire department building. And the necessity there was to keep the engines warm and keep the water from turning to ice in the tanker trucks. The $150,000 does not just include the city building. We talked, and the council committee talked with the county fire department. And there was discussion relative to buying one generator that will do service all three buildings. Now that discussion is ongoing, but that's a ballpark number that we got, that actually Terry got, that would buy a generator with sufficient size to supply electricity for three buildings, the Adams County Fire Building, the City Fire Building, and the maintenance building behind the Adams County. So this number is needs modification and revision, and we should have that next week if you want to revisit that. But this number is just a nebulous number for a huge generator. We can go back and do one just for ourselves. We can partner with Adams County, but we need to revisit that number some more.
And this number includes getting reimbursed from Adams County and from the fire district,
right,
if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So $100,000 of this would be reimbursed. We would be responsible for a third of it, whatever that number turned out to be.
So as far as our budget's concerned, we know to be responsible for a third of that, is that what you're telling us?
Yes.
So we wouldn't have that 150 then.
Right.
We can change that to look like
it, but we use that just to, for discussion to share with you what we're doing, what we're looking at. Yeah, we could easily change that to 50 grand.
And that's only contingent if the county wants to go that plan.
Right. Correct.
And they currently have a generator that will heat their bays.
Yes, it's an old diesel generator.
Yes, and they do take our trucks, swap them around, depending on the time of year, I know that. Our station, I think it consists of 2 forced air gas heaters. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't think the power usage would be that great of demand to justify that big of a system. I think it's a little overkill. And I think I'm looking in the $20,000 range to go out and buy a generator system similar to what we got out here, possibly.
There are some DOD 10 kW generators that are available, and we're looking at those also. They're refurbished military generators. Anyway, we haven't finished looking at that. Yeah. So if we could come back to you and explain a little bit more once we have more information.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest. And even, you know, sure, the time factor would be important too, you know, if something happens in Boone Valley, you still got a certain period of time. I mean, you can lease a generator, especially now the way everything's down, you can go lease a generator, and I'm sure you could have it here and set up in less than 24 hours. So that $150,000, I think, is way out of whack as far as our portion is concerned. So.
Yeah. Again, our portion was a third.
Yep.
Okay.
I think we ought to leave that on hold until we get more information.
I agree with that. Mr. Mayor, may I be excused for about 2 minutes?
Okay, why don't we take a break? That's a good idea. 4 minute break.
I think I can find a cooler room for a minute.
Oh, yeah, it's hot in here.
Whoa,
yeah.
Just leave the doors open.
Hey, yeah, let's open the doors up.
Go outside.